From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition,
California's High-Speed Rail Authority hopes to begin construction on the initial 29-mile segment from Madera to Fresno this summer. But with legal challenges, funding questions, and diminishing popular support, some are questioning whether California can or should take on a major infrastructure project. Supporters, such as Governor Brown, say it is a critical piece to California's future infrastructure needs. Others, like Assembly Minority Leader Connie Conway and many Republican politicians, say that the money could be better spent on other infrastructure projects, like fixing our highways. We'll examine what is happening to begin the first segment and whether, in light of a mountain of obstacles, high-speed rail will ever become a reality, with California Transportation Secretary Brian Kelly and Lou Thompson, Chairman of the High-Speed Rail Peer Review Group.
We'll also hear from Seth Miniver, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee.
High-speed rail, the little engine that could or couldn't.
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Last year, Governor Brown referred to high-speed rail as a little engine that could. Well, can it or will it? We're fortunate to be joined by Brian Kelly, the Secretary of the State Transportation Agency, the agency that addresses a myriad of state transportation issues, including high-speed rail. Welcome to the Maddie Report, Secretary
Thank
Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Well, recently, you and Mary Nichols, who's the chair of the California Air Resources Board, wrote an op-ed piece in the L.A. Times extolling the virtues of high-speed rail. So for those who didn't read it, what were your main points?
Well, the main point of the op-ed piece in the L.A. Times was to illustrate the environmental benefits of the high-speed rail project, particularly in a year where the governor is proposing to use what's referred to as cap-and-trade funds for this project. It was very important to lay out why this is an important project so that our transportation system in California is not just meeting mobility and safety objectives, but also meeting our sustainability and air quality objectives. And so we wanted to make sure that we were had the opportunity to share with folks the myriad of environmental benefits associated with the project.
You know, one of the things I remember reading in that article was you were talking about if you don't build high speed rail, what you're going to have to do in terms of cost for increased roads and airports and that kind of thing. Can you explain a little bit about what the choice is as we're growing as a state?
Sure. Well, you know, in California, we add about 5 million people every decade. And the increasing demand with our demographic shift toward an older population is for more mobility choices. There's one, a demand for how people get around that says we ought to move off of the vehicle solely and onto other convenient, fast, clean options. And so the project's vitally important to help us move in that direction. And, you know, that was a key part of what we wanted to portray in that piece.
Yeah, my recollection was they were talking about something in the range of $200 billion for roads and airport gates.
That's right. I think the estimate was about $158 billion. The issue was, you know, we're at capacity in a lot of instances. Our urban areas around California make up the most congested urban freeway areas in the country. Mm-hmm. And that's true across the board, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, you know.
Even in the Central Valley.
Even in the Central Valley. And even in our airports are the other way we travel. The route between San Francisco and Los Angeles is the busiest short-haul route in the country. Mm-hmm. And about 1 in 4 flights are delayed now. Yeah. Due to capacity constraints, and it's very difficult to expand those airports.
Well,
they're very expensive.
I want to ask you about that $250 million of cap-and-trade money in the governor's budget for high-speed rail. Well, the LAO recently, not so recently, a little while ago, said that may be in violation of the law. What's your response to that?
Well, I think the LAO's view of that is a little bit too narrow in terms of its interpretation of AB 32. AB 32 is what set out California's greenhouse gas emission reduction policy. It included the ability to create a cap-and-trade program and said that that program ought to be about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. One of the questions is, are you reducing greenhouse gas emissions limited to 2020, or is the program to go beyond that? And I would encourage anybody to look at AB 32 because in the very language of that bill, it states that this is not about just doing that, reducing those emissions to until 2020, but to do it beyond, and that it's very clear in the bill itself that you have to include strategies in our growth that address that issue well beyond 2020, and clearly high-speed rail would go beyond that.
Well, you know, $250 million is nothing to sneeze at. It's a lot of money, but it's a small fraction of what it's going to cost to build that first segment, which is about $31 billion. What do you say to those who say this is just a drop in the bucket? It's not going to get you there.
Well, this is the first year that at the state level we are proposing to spend any cap-and-trade dollars. And so the $250 million is out of an $850 million pot just in this budget year. A fraction of cap-and-trade dollars going to high-speed rail is proposed ongoing. This is the first year's proposed investment, but the governor is intending, and it'll be certainly clear as we go through the budget process, that the amount going to high-speed rail on an annual basis would be more than that and would be ongoing for as long as we had a cap-and-trade source.
Okay, so it's $250 million this year, but ongoing.
Ongoing.
All right, let me ask you about this. Budgets are about priorities.
Yes.
And so high-speed rail right now is the estimate is $68 billion.
Yes.
So the question is that where we should be putting $68 billion? Aren't there other higher priority needs like water infrastructure, public employee pensions, retiree health, fixing our roads? How do you respond to that?
Well, the thing about California, and I would say any state, but particularly California, we're a very diverse state. We have a lot of diverse needs. And you have to address more than one thing at one time when you're governing. And in this case, the governor has a very proven track record on being a disciplined fiscal steward for the state of California. Our budget is now in the best shape it's been in years. And that's in part to very tough decisions that this governor and the legislature has made. But you also have to invest for the future. And really, we're at a time, a transformative time in transportation, where we're looking at the kinds of investments that we need to make. And I think what I said it earlier, and I'd repeat here, is we have to make transportation investments going forward that are not just about moving people, but it's moving people, it's safety, and it's air quality and environmental stewardship. And the high-speed rail project checks each of those boxes. So we think it's an important investment going forward. I would just add that the revenues we're proposing to use for high-speed rail are coming out of a bond approved by the voters for exactly that purpose, and cap-and-trade funds, which are for transportation investments that net greenhouse gas emission reductions. And the high-speed rail, again, achieves both of those.
Yeah, the debate will probably continue, though. Well, we're talking with Brian Kelly, Secretary of the State Transportation Agency, about California's high-speed rail project. So what's the current status of high-speed rail?
Well, the project's moving forward. It's important to remember that when the bond first passed, we had a $9 billion bond, and that was the only source of investment we had into the project. Since that time, we've secured a $3.3 billion commitment from the federal government, the first first phase environmental report is done and certified. We've released the first contract for construction on that segment, and it came in about 20% below the engineer's estimate. And so the project is, there's a lot of positive steps forward on moving the project ahead. We do have some challenges in the litigation area where we have to continue to work through those and comply with court rulings.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that. I mean, because there have been court rulings. One blocked the sale of $8.6 billion in state bonds. The second revoked the state's funding plan for high-speed rail. Have these decisions effectively hogtied high-speed rail?
Well, the decisions have presented some questions of law that we think need to be clarified, and they're broader than just this project. They have to do with how the state issues bonds for any project, but the process under which we issue what are called general obligation bonds. The project will move forward because the judge's order, raised issues again about a process point on issuing bonds, and that's an issue that if we have to go back and retrace our steps and just take another process action, we will. But I don't think the project is necessarily hogtied. It's just we have to be mindful of the process steps we take as we go forward.
The governor recently asked the state Supreme Court to take a look at this issue. The same state Supreme Court basically did a Pontius Pilate, and they kind of washed their hands of it, and they sent it back to the Court of Appeals for expedited consideration. Since the state's obligated to put up money to match that $3 billion that the federal government's already put up, What happens if the state loses at the Court of Appeals level? Is it game, set, match?
No, not at all. As I said, there are larger questions of law that that the lower court ruling presented with respect to how the state issues bonds for any project, not just this project. That's why we asked the Supreme Court for a review and some clarity on that point. If the court rules against that writ, we will have to go back and take and retrace our steps and take some additional actions that that the court found that were insufficient the first time. And that involves having our finance committee re-meet and discuss the issuance of bonds and make sure that, we have a hearing with evidence presented on the record. There are some challenges with the court's decision that we need to get clarified. Again, broader impacts than just this project.
I want to get to that, but sure. Let me ask you one last question on this, and that is, what if you lose? Where would the money come from?
Well, if we lose, I would say two things. One, we still work through the process to ultimately get bond dollars. The judge's order did not take away the legislature's appropriation for the project. So the bond appropriation is done. The issue is, what are the steps you have to follow before you get those bonds issued? So we have to work through that. The second part, though, is, and this is really the importance of the governor's cap-and-trade proposal, cap-and-trade dollars we think are a very good and appropriate use of state funds for a greenhouse gas reducing project. And we will want to use those cap-and-trade revenues to match federal funds as we go along until we can get the bonds cleared and released. Yeah. So the combination of the two sources of funds are very important to move forward on the project.
And there's obviously going to be probably litigation or something around those cap-and-trade funds as well, if it's approved. Because some people are saying that, yes, maybe high-speed rail is going to impact air quality when it's built, but while it's being built, it's going to actually add to air quality problems. And that's just a debate that's I'm going to leave to smarter people than me to discuss.
Yeah, I would just make one comment on that, and that is that the High-Speed Rail Authority has committed to a carbon-neutral construction period using cleaner equipment. They've committed to renewable power to power the train and mm-hmm. the system. And they're doing a massive tree planting exercise as well. So carbon neutrality is an objective of the project.
You mentioned also, I want to get back to something you mentioned about the fact that this decision on the bonds for high-speed rail actually cripples the government's ability to sell bonds and all other kinds of public works projects, things like roads and schools. How so?
Well, all general obligation bonds in California establish a finance committee that makes decisions on when you issue bonds. And the finance committee looks at things like what is the market for best rates for bond issuances and things like that. But it is solely tasked with determining the desirability of issuing those bonds. And so that applies to the high-speed rail bond or any other bond. What the judge said is there needs to be more on the record and more evidence before that committee, before they make those decisions, but the court didn't set any kind of standard. And so the issue is the law leaves it entirely to that board to make the judgment, says that that board can make a judgment based on desirability, which is entirely that board's decision. And so with no standard in place, the question is, are you opening the door to several challenges on any kind of bond, not just high-speed rail, but any bond that the voters have approved to invest in California's infrastructure? And that's a key question that needs to be resolved.
So there's a concern it's potentially a Pandora's box.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank State Transportation Secretary Brian Kelly for being here. We're now joined by Lou Thompson, chair of the High-Speed Rail Peer Review Group. Welcome to the Manning Report, Lou.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
So first of all, can you describe a little bit about this high-speed rail peer review group and what exactly you guys are doing?
Okay, that's a good question because the peer review group is an unusual group. It was formed by the legislature, appointed by the various cabinet departments. And our job is to look at the issues and then advise the legislature on what the issues are and how to deal with them. There are eight of us supposed to be. Right now there are four, but there have been six experts with a number of different fields, including transportation, rail passenger service, high-speed rail. And we're supposed to review the reports and other things that the High-Speed Rail Authority does and then give the legislature our comments on them. Might be useful if I can summarize what we've done so far as a
sure.
peer review group. First of all, we generally have said we favor high-speed rail. We think that high-speed rail has got to be a part of the overall picture in California. Most of our transport exports, and we don't think that, that using more of the past will solve the problems of the future.
But a critic might say that that taints your view of the project. You're looking to validate your position on that.
I can't imagine anyone thinking that that advocating passenger rail in general taints my view of the project.
Okay.
I don't believe it does. We think that there are advantages to passenger rail so that it has a role in the transportation system. I really want to emphasize this. The legislature has to make choices. They can't do everything. Transportation has to compete within the state budget, and high-speed rail has to compete within the transportation area. And so the legislature will not be able to say, well, we'd just like to pay for everything, please. They will have to make hard choices. Our job, as we construe it, is to help them make the right choices and to help them know what they are doing when they make these choices. We are not advocates. There's enough yelling on both sides. The legislature, I think, is not served very well by that, and I think they want someone, at least in between, who can say, these are the issues as we see them, and this is what you should think about them.
Just to give our audience an idea about your background, so why are you on this peer review group?
Well, I have probably the most unusual background for this because I'm the only person in the U.S. who's ever actually built a high-speed rail system in the public sector in the United States, because I ran the Northeast Corridor Project at the U.S. Department of Transportation. I worked there for a number of years, and I worked for the World Bank as their railways expert around the world for 17 years. And then I think I visited or traveled on just about every railway and every high-speed railway in
the
world.
That's a pretty good resume.
So I've been in and out. I've seen this, not just from the gee whiz, it looks nice stage, the pictures of Mount Fujiyama in the background, but actually running one of these projects.
Okay. Let me ask you about this project specifically. You know, construction was supposed to begin in 2012, end of 2012, then early 2013, then July, then September. It still hasn't started. So when can the public expect that high-speed rail is actually going to break ground?
Well, I think that you'd have to say that Governor Brown has made this one of his highest priorities. He's put very effective people in charge of it. There's $3 billion in free federal money there. There are $9 billion in California money there. So the pressures to do something are very strong, and I think normally you would think it will get started or it will happen. The challenge is right now the court cases. And if those were to turn out wrong, then it could cause a real problem for the project.
Let's talk about the construction deadline. It's coming up pretty quickly, the first one. The federal stimulus dollars say you've got to get 130 miles done between Madera and Kern County by September 30th of 2017. That's a little more than 3 years away. What do you say to those that are skeptical about the feasibility of meeting that deadline?
Well, let's be exact about that. What the deadline is that the federal money has to be spent, work has to be done, and the federal money has to be spent by September the 30th. It does not say that the entire 130 miles has to be completed. In fact, I'm not sure that there is any specific limit about what has to be done, just that the money has to be spent. It's a challenge. I don't think anyone who's with any experience in this would say otherwise. But there are a number of different ways that this challenge can be dealt with, depending on what they learn as they go along.
What about the segments of, you know, the Central Valley to L.A. done by 2022 and L.A. to San Francisco by 2029 as promised in Prop 1A? Are those reasonable expectations?
I think it's going to be hard to meet those, but I looked at the legislation this morning, and the way those are stated is that it is the, quote, intent of the legislature that this should happen. Those are not absolute deadlines after which, the coach turns into a pumpkin. These are intentions of the legislature, and I think they'll do their best to meet that, but it's not something that they can be held to, I don't think, in an enforcement sense.
I guess we'll see maybe another court case on that. We're talking with Lou Thompson, the chair of the High Speed Rail Peer Review Group. One opponent to High Speed Rail recently wrote that, quote, the official price tag of $68 billion is flatly unbelievable. A 2012 study by California Common Sense, a Silicon Valley-based nonprofit, suggested that the final cost would top $203 billion after accounting for inflation delays and other financing realities. So what is this project going to cost? Is it going to be $68 billion? Is it going to be $203 billion? Is it going to be something in between?
Well, the real answer to that on all mega projects, of which this is a mega project on steroids, actually, it's one of the largest ones that's ever been done. The real answer to that is we don't know for sure. That the real answer is going to be a distribution of probabilities, and nobody knows what the final number is. Anyone who says now that they know what the exact answer is wrong. They don't have enough information.
Well, let me ask it this way then. Is it going to be closer to $68 billion, or is it going to be closer to $203 billion?
We have no way of knowing at this point. They have yet to do any construction. They have yet to fix the final routes. They have yet to fix much of the technology. The schedule is still in flux. The legal challenges could delay the project or not. Who knows?
So the best you can say is, to the best of our knowledge, we think it's going to be.
The best forecast that they have made so far was the $64 billion in the 2012 revised business plan. And as far as I know, that was based on all of the techniques that you'd want to use. Now, we have urged them in the 2014 business plan, which is due today, we have urged them to go to a different way of estimating costs, in which they show it as a range of outcomes rather than a single outcome. If they do that, I think we'll have a better handle on it.
Okay.
Call me tomorrow. I'll know the answer.
Okay. I might do that. What about all these delays? Are they going to drive up the costs?
Delays always drive up the costs. And litigation always is a delay, and that can always drive up the costs. There's no question about that.
So you've got all these federal dollars that you've got to spend. And I read somewhere that if you start a construction on January 1st, it would require you to spend $3.75 million a day to spend that money in time under the federal requirements. That would be the fastest use of money in U.S. history. Is that a realistic burn rate?
It could be done. No one can say it can't be done. But what we have said as the peer review group is that that's a massive management challenge, a massive management.
You think they're up to it?
I don't know. We'll have to see. They are confident that they can. The experience of these projects would suggest that confidence is a premium quality here, but it's a challenge.
They've got that $250 million out there that the governor has in the budget using cap and trade money to bolster high-speed rail.
Right.
Does that sufficiently address the short-term financing issue?
It would be part of the answer, but it's not an entire answer for the short-term answer, and it certainly is not a full answer for the long-term.
So where does the other money come from then? Where is the short answer, the answer for the short-term financing come from?
The answer is that has not been defined. The plan itself called for federal money. Such a program doesn't exist right now, but it could. The 2000 business plan for the high-speed rail suggested a quarter-cent sales tax. I've done a little back-of-the-envelope calculation that said that a 20-cent tax gallon tax on fuel would pay for the whole program. So there are plenty of ways to pay for it. Question is, which one are we going to implement?
All right, which one would the voters support?
That's right.
What about the long-term financing of high-speed rail? No money is going to be coming out of a Republican-controlled House, and you don't really see any private money on the horizon. So where is the long-term financing for high-speed rail coming
from? As of now, that's not clear. Certainly the state's contribution will have to be raised. That would appear to be clear, but how, I don't know. Future federal programs are certainly up in the air. No one knows whether there will be one, and if so, what it will be. There is a role for the private sector in this, but that role will only emerge from a much clearer business plan, business model for the high-speed rail authority, so they can say, what is the private sector going to do as opposed to what the public sector is going to do? This all it's a jigsaw puzzle that has to be fit together.
It seems like there's a bit of a pinch here this year because there's some short-term money that needs to be put up to do the match for the federal government. It's also the long-term of getting this thing built. And the governor is going to be running for election in November. I don't want to get too much into politics on this, but the reality is he probably doesn't want anything on the budget that deviates from his narrative of being a fiscally prudent governor. So then, if we're not going to the voters with anything in terms of asking for more support, then what?
My job is to put the issues before the legislature and have them think about it. I'm certainly not advising the governor on
that. So what's the legislator's responsibility? So bottom line, you're a member of the High-Speed Rail Peer Review Group. In your professional judgment, what do you think? Do you believe that high-speed rail can meet the voter-approved bonds, the restrictions on the voter-approved bonds as it's presently being presented?
That will depend a lot on the interpretation of some of the terms in the law. For example, no operating subsidy. That term is not fully defined, and we've actually asked that it be defined, and it hasn't been. It depends also on what parts of the law you think are hortatory as opposed to mandatory. What I do think is that there is at least one scenario in which California ends up with a very nice high-speed rail service from Los Angeles to San Francisco, and there are other scenarios in which we end up with less. And what we're trying to do is make sure people understand that none of these are certain, and that there are ways in which it could turn out and different results.
Okay, lots of questions. Well, I want to thank Lou Thompson, the chair of the High-Speed Rail Peer Review Group, as well as California State Transportation Secretary Brian Kelly for joining us.
Up next, what's happening on the ground as the high-speed rail project attempts to build the first 29-mile segment in the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Seth Nineveh, a reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, a reporter with the Fresno Bee.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. Will the initial 29-mile segment be built in the valley on time and on budget? We have two reporters who have closely monitored the developments of the high-speed rail with us today. Seth Nineveh is a reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan is a reporter with the Fresno Bee. Welcome to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Well, I should say welcome back. So, Tim, let me start with you. What activities are occurring regarding this first 29-mile segment between Madera and Fresno in terms of surveying, mapping, purchasing land, et cetera? Where are we? All right, and by the way, are we on schedule or are we behind schedule?
Well, all of the above are taking place, and
so we're both on schedule and behind schedule.
No, when we talk about, I mean, all those activities that you mentioned are taking place to some degree or another. There's been some surveying work. There's been some geotechnical borings to test the soil under where some of the major structures are going to be. There's been some land acquisition. That's probably the point where they're the farthest behind in the schedule. The rail authority initially had their eyes on wanting to acquire more than 200 parcels by the end of 2013. In a report to the High Speed Rail Authority Board in early February, a memo indicated that they have 9 parcels in hand. The rail authority spokespeople have told me that they have contracts for 40 in various stages of approval, including some which will allow them to come onto the property and do some of the work ahead of formal closing of escrow, but they are very far behind, and the memo identified that as one of the risks that the authority faces in its development schedule.
Wow. Well, in the last few months, the authority has suffered a couple of legal defeats, but the legal outlook may be changing a little bit for high-speed rail. But anyway, there was a recent Court of Appeals decision that put on hold two potentially crippling legal orders by a Superior Court judge up in Sacramento against high-speed rail. And they said they're going to review the matter. But Seth, I want to ask you, can you briefly describe those lower Superior Court rulings and why they were viewed as so potentially crippling for high-speed rail?
Well, the Kings County ruling by the Kings County plaintiffs is the one I'm most familiar with. And basically in that ruling, the judge simply said, high-speed rail authority, you're not in compliance with Proposition 1A. And more specifically, you're not in compliance with the requirement to have adequate funding identified. And so that ruling, initially, the Kings County plaintiffs felt that was a victory for them and a loss for high-speed rail. But high-speed rail, the authority, sort of said, oh, it's really no big deal. And so that sort of sets the stage for the appeal that the high-speed rail authority has filed recently of that case. Now, the other case involves the sale of state bonds. If you recall, $10 billion was authorized in Proposition 1A.
Yes, if it was $10 million, I don't think there'd be this dispute going on.
That's correct. Yeah, if they could build it for $10 million, there'd be no problem. And so basically the judge froze the sale of those bonds. But again, I think Tim might actually be more familiar with that case than I am. So,
do you want to talk a little bit about that case, Tim?
A little bit, yeah. Essentially, the judge ruled that the High Speed Rail Finance Committee, which is representatives of the Rail Authority, Treasurer's Office, Controller's Office, et cetera, really didn't do their homework in terms of actually scrutinizing the request from the Rail Authority to authorize these bonds.
Basically, rubber stamped it?
Essentially, that was what the judge said. So that was the basis for the Rail Authority and the Department of Finance going with this appeal initially to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court deflected it to a Third Court of Appeal in Sacramento.
Okay, so Tim, you know what the Fresno Bee have been following this very closely. So now we've got it at the Court of Appeals. What have they said, and what are the implications for the timing of their decision?
What the Court of Appeal ruled in mid-February was that it will hear the appeal from the Rail Authority on both the Prop 1A bond case and the Kings County case over Prop 1A compliance. They essentially stayed the lower court's order that the Rail Authority rescind its 2011 approval of its financing plan. And that financing plan was what the judge found was out of compliance in terms of identifying the funding and the environmental certifications needed before they could start building.
Is this a victory then for high-speed rail?
I'd say it's still sort of like a pair of tumbling dice. They haven't come to rest yet. They didn't roll snake eyes, so they didn't lose flat out. The Court of Appeal didn't simply say, we uphold the lower court ruling. Instead, the court said, we're going to hear it. So, you know, the authority didn't roll a 7 or 11. They didn't win. They didn't roll snake eyes. So it's still yet to see what happens after briefings and arguments to the appeals court.
When do you expect a decision by the appeals court?
Well, they've said that the I believe it's the real parties in interest, Kings County and the other folks who don't think this is such a great idea, have until I believe it's March 17th to file their arguments. And then the Rail Authority will have a certain period of time after that.
I think it's actually 2 weeks, so April 1st, and no comments about April Fool's Day, but
yes.
to get their response. But then the court's got to make its ruling, so we're pushing this into the summer sometime?
Probably late spring, early summer, I would imagine. The court will rule in the court's own good time, I suppose.
Okay. Now, construction is supposed to start in July, so this is going to be all happening at about the same time.
A lot of different things are colliding in terms of the schedule, yes. You've got the Rail Authority, which wants to begin its construction this spring/summer. You've got the federal government, which is requiring the state to start matching money at some point in the near future. April 1st is when the equation changes from the federal government putting up all the money and the state catching up on the match to when the state has to start shouldering the burden of paying for the expenses and then being reimbursed from the federal grant funds.
And the split there, just to remind our listeners, the split there is what, $3 billion from the federal government and about $3 billion from the state?
A little over $3 billion from the feds and somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.7 billion, I think it is, from the state. Whether it's from Prop 1A funds or other sources.
Yeah, $100 million here, $100 million there. Pretty soon it all adds up.
Exactly.
So, Seth, I mean, you guys in Hanford have been ground zero for lawsuits. But, you know, regardless of who wins these lawsuits that are currently going on, I mean, aren't we just going to see continuous, endless appeals of these decisions, no matter who wins or loses?
Well, that remains to be seen. Of course, we've already seen one appeal, so I guess it wouldn't be surprising if we saw more. But again, I think we're almost in the same boat we were in the last time we talked about this, which was we're waiting to see what the court says. And so once again, we're waiting to see what the court says. And so locally, the protest movement locally against high-speed rail has sort of gone into hiatus, I guess. Simply, they're kind of waiting like the rest of us. But I'm not sure about the endless appeal argument. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, there's still a lot of moving parts to this. We've got Judge Kinney's, the Sacramento Superior Court Judge Michael Kinney, his rulings that have been appealed to third appeals up in Sacramento. And that involves the Prop 1A as well as Part 1 of the Kings County lawsuit over the initial compliance of the finance plan with Prop 1A. There's still Part B of the Kings County lawsuit.
And that is?
That is over whether or not operationally whether the plan as proposed for high-speed rail can meet the performance requirements of Proposition 1A. That is, can it provide a 2-hour, 40-minute ride nonstop from San Francisco to Los Angeles? Can it operate without a subsidy? Those are the two main points of the rest of the Kings County lawsuit. There was a hearing on February 14th about that, as far as whether or not Part B of that lawsuit would even happen, whether there will be a trial on that. The High-Speed Rail Authority is hoping to avoid a trial on that. And, of course, the Kings County folks would very much like to press forward with left with airing out in a trial what I think they think will be quite a bit of dirty laundry in terms of performance issues.
Well, let's talk about the governor's proposal about using $250 million of cap-and-trade money to support high-speed rail. Tim, what are your thoughts on that? Is that going to be something that even if it gets past the legislature that someone's going to challenge that using that money for that purpose violates the cap-and-trade law?
I think we'll probably see some litigation on that. How far that will go, I don't know. That's anybody's guess. But, you know, I think that will be something subject to litigation over whether or not that is allowable. The California Air Resources Board has made indications that money would be applicable to high-speed rail in the long-term scheme of things. You've had opponents who are basically saying, no, this money is supposed to be for immediate air quality improvements, whereas operationally high-speed rail won't be providing any benefits until it starts operating in the early 2020s.
Well, here's possibly a heads up, and that is Mary Nichols, who's the chair of the Air Resources Board, recently wrote an op-ed with Brian Kelly, the California Secretary of Transportation, extolling the virtues of high-speed rail. So that mm-hmm. might tell you where the Air Resources Board might be heading.
Sure.
What about this issue, you know, the state obligation to match this $3-plus billion in federal money? What happens if the state loses and the Court of Appeals upholds the lower court's ruling that stopped the sale of high-speed rail bonds? I mean, where is the money going to come from? And is there any – do you have any backup plan?
The only backup plan right now is cap-and-trade money from the sale of carbon benefits. The governor is proposing $250 million this year, which in the overall scheme of things is a drop in the bucket, considering California has to come up with eventually $2.7 billion over the next 3 or 4 years of construction, if construction actually commences.
But isn't that $250 million, if they get it this year, just the beginning of the use of cap-and-trade money for this project?
Yes, I suppose so. The indications are that the governor would like to see cap-and-trade become not necessarily a sustaining source of funding for this. They would much rather see the Prop 1A bonds be the bulk of that. But cap and trade is a backstop, and providing some money from that on an ongoing basis in future years could at least help meet the match that's required by the federal government.
Okay, so High Speed Rail Authority recently came out with an update of its 2012 business plan. Mm-hmm. So, Tim, what were the key changes and how do you think they were received?
The main changes that we see in that 2014 business plan is a slight reduction in the overall cost of the 520-mile San Francisco to L.A. section.
And when you say slight, you mean slight.
I mean very slight.
1%, I think it was, right?
About 1%, a reduction from 68.4 to 67.6 billion, if I recall correctly.
You do recall correctly.
Oh,
it's in my notes.
Okay, good. I'm not slipping yet then. The other thing that it contained was a slight increase in the operating costs, and I don't have those numbers in my head, as well as an increase in ridership but less revenue. And that revenue decline is attributed to higher ridership but shorter rides.
Mm-hmm.
So more from the midsections of the system to the endpoints rather than a lot of end-to-end mm-hmm. rides. The other thing that it contains is a little bit more discussion of possible use of cap-and-trade money as a possible backstop source of matching funds. It does continue to rely on anticipated federal contributions. That comes despite the pledges of most of the Valley's Republican delegation to Congress being steadfastly opposed to providing any more funding for high-speed rail at the federal level.
Yeah, that would seem to be either a change in the House from Republican to Democrat or I don't know how to describe it, a very big move by the Republicans in changing their position on this issue, which it seems hard to believe that will happen.
Yeah, I think that's probably whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah. Okay. Better you say it than me. So, Seth, I'm going to ask you, what's been the feeling in Hanford about this new business plan? I think the mantra of there not being enough money is just reinforces that mantra. Even though, as Tim mentioned, it does include a little bit of cap and trade funds, it's still, billions short of what they would need to build the first operating segment. So there's still that issue. And, of course, you still have the lower court Judge Kenney ruling basically identifying that as the main flaw or one of the main flaws of the authority's financing plan. And so those arguments are going to continue to come up in this plan. And, again, to sort of piggyback on what Tim was saying, why should the federal government or why would anyone expect the federal government at this point to fund high-speed rail in a significant way? I mean, all signs are that that's not going to happen.
You know, it was interesting, Tim, when we were talking in an earlier segment to Lou Thompson, the chair of the High-Speed Rail Peer Review Group, he was saying, listen, it's unreasonable to expect exact numbers on such a big project. These numbers move over time. They go up, they go down. And he also says, listen, the bond was written, if you take a look at the language, with intentionally vague language. So it's the intent to have a system that goes from L.A. to San Francisco by 2029. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you think the public and or the courts are focused on those specific words?
I think they are. Judge Kenney in Sacramento has sort of proven the point that words have meaning. And in his rulings in August of 2013, where he initially found that the High Speed Rail Authority had violated or not lived up to Proposition 1A with its funding plan, he very much offered a plain English reading of the language in the bill. And so it's been an interesting experience watching the attorneys for the Rail Authority convolute, and that's a word that could get me in trouble, but that's what it seems like when you're watching the actions in court, what seem to be rather convoluted arguments. You know, there's a certain logic to them, but a plain English reading of the bill, you know, whether it's the intent of the legislature or not, intent of the legislature is a thing that could be seized on by both the project opponents and said, this is what the legislature wanted, and it can be seized upon by project supporters as saying, this was their intent. It wasn't their specific, you know, thou shalt.
So as we've learned, words do matter, I guess, particularly to two reporters and maybe even to some judges. Well, up next, are the cracks in the support for high-speed rail getting wider, and could it doom the project? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking high-speed rail with two Valley reporters who've been covering the issue extensively. Seth Miniver is a reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan is a reporter with the Fresno Bee. So, Seth, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, has publicly split with Governor Jerry Brown on the need for high-speed rail, saying that the money should be spent elsewhere. Does his stance simply reflect the widespread public skepticism about high-speed rail?
I think it does, although his motives might be different than trying to express the public sentiment. But I do feel like, you know, a recent poll showed that 59% of people, if they had a chance for a do-over, would vote against the project. So I think Newsom is picking up on that. I'm not sure other Democrats, though, have quite decided to follow him on that. Any thoughts on that, Tim?
I think Lieutenant Governor is a politician who's keeping an eye on the public sentiment. I think he is reflecting the public skepticism. And like Seth, you know, who knows what the motives are, but yeah, maybe his motives are pure.
It was interesting. Someone said to me in Sacramento on the QT, don't ever bet against Jerry Brown. So, you know, he's got some force too, so we'll see how this thing plays out. He seems to think that this is going to be one of his legacy projects, so we'll see if that happens. Tim, you know, recently the Republicans and Assembly Minority Leader Connie Conway introduced a proposal that would reallocate high-speed rail dollars for other infrastructure projects. Well, listen, Republicans really have no hope of passing it by themselves in the legislature. They have less than a third of either house. But is anybody in the governor's office or at the High Speed Rail Authority worried that it could get enough Democratic votes in an election year to pass?
Publicly, they're not saying that. And from a practical standpoint, I don't think it's a realistic hope, because it's Prop 1A money. That's the state's money that it has set aside for this. Prop 1A is specifically high-speed rail money. You know, if that were to get turned, you know, revoted, which I think is still unlikely, although it could eventually happen. If it were to get revoted and that money were to, you know, come back into the state at some point, and right now that money doesn't exist because the bonds haven't been sold. I don't necessarily think it's a realistic expectation at this point because high-speed rail money is high-speed rail money.
You know, I'm wondering, how do the people in Hanford feel about this? Do they think that that's a realistic proposal, or do they see the politics of it and not just not adding up?
Well, as far as what they would want to see, I'm sure they'd love to see that money go for roads. But, I mean, if they, I think realistically they would probably, if they thought about it, they would realize that it's not really – it's probably not going to happen.
Oh, but it makes some political sense, certainly in Kings County and Tulare. Tim, do you envision a scenario where the money could possibly ever be redirected from high-speed rail to a passenger rail project that connects Bakersfield and L.A.? And if anybody's ever taken the train, they realize, they know that you've got to take a bus from Bakersfield to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't that be something that a lot of people would support, a connection between Bakersfield and Los Angeles?
There's been a lot of talk about that, that would be the more logical thing to do rather than building an initial stretch in the San Joaquin Valley would be to try to fill in that rail gap between Bakersfield and Los Angeles, whether it's by way of Palmdale and the Antelope Valley or straight over the Grapevine, which I think is technologically a much more challenging task. But again, as with Prop 1A written the way Prop 1A was written, it won't happen with Prop 1A money.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of opponents to high-speed rail, which you talk to, Seth, I'm sure, say, you know, they don't want to give any money because there's no private funding that's stepped up to the plate. But proponents of high-speed rail say, well, that hasn't happened because you have to build the initial segment first, and that's not happening because House Republicans aren't supporting any funding for that initial segment. So is this kind of a chicken and egg thing?
Well, I think a lot of Kings County opponents would argue that the initial operating segment is the first test example of what the system can do. So they would probably expect some sort of private financing to come at that point because that would be proof that it could operate. And so I think the argument there would be you have to get to the first functional segment before you can attract private funding. And I think they would go along with that argument, but again, you still have to come up with the funding for that segment. And that's the issue, I think.
What are your thoughts on this, Tim?
I agree with Seth. I think you have a situation, and this is something that the authority has been saying all along as well, is not all along, but over the last couple of years, they have said that once we get this thing built, then we can get some investment to continue the extensions, to build the future pieces, to perhaps maybe get into L.A. from Palmdale, to get to San Francisco from San Jose.
Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of money to be made possibly on passengers in the valley as opposed to connecting it to Los Angeles or San Francisco where there are a lot of people
exactly.
that could potentially use it.
Exactly. I mean, the plan as it sits right now from as far as the business plan is, you know, the initial construction segment that's being planned now between Madera, Merced, and the Bakersfield area would never run high-speed trains until it is connected at least to Palmdale mm-hmm. to where they can link in and tie into the passenger core that can connect from the Los Angeles area on the L.A. metro system. Mm-hmm. There's no market. There's not enough bodies here in the central San Joaquin Valley to make this a paying thing.
Well, let me ask you this, Tim. What do you see as the biggest drivers to making this happen as opposed to the biggest obstacles from stopping high-speed rail from happening?
I think the biggest driver is the fact that we've got a pot of, you know, $3 billion plus in federal money. The biggest obstacle is that we have nothing beyond that $3 plus billion in federal money and the Prop 1A money. That is the biggest obstacle that there is right now, besides the opposition that exists in the Bay Area, besides the opposition that exists in Kings County, and opposition that's really throughout the state to whatever degree that is. Money speaks, and money is the driver, and money is the obstacle.
Follow the money. Well, Seth, what do you think? What are the biggest drivers for it and obstacles against it?
I think Tim's right about the driver. There is money in hand. I think, though, the negatives are really mounting, and I think drought actually is adding an additional problem to high-speed rail because it is distracting public support. It is distracting public attention, I should say, away from high-speed rail and toward the more pressing issue of how are we going to have enough water. And as that issue continues to compound, I think people will start to wonder, well, should we really be funding high-speed rail at this time? I think that's just going to make public perception turn more negative against pushing funding for high-speed rail.
Yeah, budgets are all about priorities because money is not absolute, and so decisions have to be made. Seth, so here we are looking at high-speed rail in 2014. If you were a betting person, not saying you are, what would you bet? Would you bet on high-speed rail that it's going to happen or not?
I would bet that they actually end up going back to the drawing board on this project. That would be my bet. The arguments for connecting the L.A. Basin with existing train system, Amtrak, are pretty compelling. And not only that, but you could actually pull in private financing from companies, freight rail companies that could benefit from that. And that's been discussed by groups like the Train Riders Association of California. I would put my money on that, but I'm not a betting man. So.
Okay, so Tim, you got the last word on this.
I am a betting person, but this is one that I think is too much of a pick 'em. I wouldn't bet on it either way. I'd keep my money in my pocket on this one.
Okay, I guess we're going to talk more about high-speed rail as the year goes on, but I want to thank our two guests, Seth Miniver, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Matty Daily, by just logging on to our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.